What about Bill and them boys down the street?
They're on their own.
You mean we gonna leave them?
You heard what I said.
But Bill's gonna be mad as hell.
Maybe he won't be around to get mad. Our job is to clean out this here vault. His job is to take care of the other bank. So long as everybody does his own job, we ain't got no problems.
But Bill's trapped. That bastard up on the roof has got him pinned down.
That's Bill's problem now. We empty this safe like he told us to, and we'll be following his orders.
He'll kill every damn one of us if we ride off and leave him there, Jack.
A dead man ain't gonna kill nobody.
Sure as hell is cold. If it was me down there, I'd sure want somebody to help me get out.
We gotta get rid of them bastards holed up inside the marshal's office.
Sammy walked over quickly to help Frankie take bags from the safe.
I wish the hell Scarface would get back. I wonder what's keeping it.
Maybe that Jasper up on the top of the cafe went and killed him too.
Shit, Scarface ain't gonna be that easy to kill.
Just cause a man ain't easy to kill don't mean he's gonna live forever.
Nah, my money's on Scarface. He knows his business, and his business is killing folks when he ain't down off a horse reading sign for us to follow.
I sure hope you're right. Our biggest problem's gonna be them two sons of bitches in the marshal's office. We get past them, and we got a chance to get out of here with our skins.
You are born warrior, Sammy.
Yeah? Yeah. I'm still alive.
Hurry up, damn it!
I'm pulling them out as fast as I can.
Me too!
All right, let's get ready to ride.
Jack walked over to the front doors and peeked out. The street was littered with the bodies of men and horses and women. Blood lay in crimson pools from one end of Maine to the other. Flies had begun to gather at the corpses.
Hurry the hell up! Looks like they got Bill surrounded.
Jack didn't really mind leaving Bill Anderson behind with gunmen all around him. Of late, Bill had begun to ramble, and it seemed his mind wandered back to the past, to the war, as if he were still living it.
We're damn near ready. Only what the hell are we gonna do about them two shotguns over at the lawman's office when we run outside?
Stay low.
They'll sure be shooting. Every damn time something moves out yonder, one of them shotguns goes off real loud.
Are you scared of loud noises, Sammy?
I'm sure as hell scared of dying.
You ain't gonna die. Just get that money on the backs of them horses yonder. We're all gonna be filthy rich as soon as we get clear of Dodge.
It's getting clear of Dodge is worrying me.
Like I said before, you worry too goddamn much.
Here goes. Somebody cover me.
Waylon Burke crouched down behind the brick wall across the front of the blacksmith shop. Jim Bob Watley was sweating, and with shotgun shells lying around his boots, he seemed out of place somehow. He didn't look like a deputy, much less a man who belonged in a deadly shootout with outlaws.
I fetched my scatter gun. Somebody's got to help you and Marshal Earp and Cody. Don't seem nobody else is willing.
We're obliged for your help, Mr. Burke. Only got to remember one thing. The marshal said to keep our heads down and only to shoot when we get a chance without getting our own heads blowed off. With so darn much lead flying all over the place, it ain't been so easy to do what Marshal Earp said.
I'll be real careful. Who the hell would have believed so many bank robbers would show up and dodge at the same time? My wife said I gotta help the marshal keep our money safe, because nearly everything we got is over yonder in that vault of Mr. Herring's. Our little store don't make all that much money, but we need every cent of it in order to keep on living here.
Jim Bob watched one of the outlaws peer out of a shattered bank window. And with an opportunity like that, he knew that Marshal Earp expected him to shoot.
You got it!
Waylon rose up just high enough to take a shot of his own. He grinned as soon as he opened his eyelids again, blinking, trying to see if he'd been able to hit one of the robbers himself.
Get down, Mr. Burke!
Jim Bob cowered behind the brick wall, watching Waylon making a slow half turn in his direction, with an odd expression on his face, a look of surprise. Then Jim Bob noticed a hole below the storekeeper's right eye, a hole the size of a man's thumb.
Jesus, Mr. Burke! How come you didn't get back down behind this here wall?
Waylon's lips were moving, as if he were trying to answer Jim Bob's question. But pinkish foam began bubbling from his throat instead, rolling off his tongue as his knees slowly began to buckle. Still, somehow on his feet, his shotgun fell to the dirt butt first, causing the second barrel to discharge. A sizzling load of buckshot tore off Waylon's right arm.
Jesus!
Waylon sank to his knees then, the stump of his missing arm pumping blood. He toppled over on his face and lay still until one of his booted feet began to twitch.
Jesus! Oh, dear Jesus!
Take that, you son of a bitch!
Jim Bob recognized that voice as coming from the young cowboy who rode with Smoke Jensen. Jim Bob had seen Jensen stand up on the rooftop of the cafe not long after the fight had begun, throwing a dead man off the building. Jensen had guts. Either that or he was crazy as all hell. Cody claimed Smoke Jensen was an honest-to-goodness gun slick. Yeah, well, maybe he was after all. He sure had been willing to throw in with the marshal to help defend the town when it wasn't none of his affair. Jim Bob chanced a quick look over the top of the wall. A shadow moved inside the bank, only an outline because of the slant of the sun. Then a man ran outside carrying canvas bags of money, heading for a pack horse that was tied at the hitch rail directly in front of the bank. Jim Bob shouldered his shotgun quickly. The robber flipped over on his back. The money sacks fell to the dirt beside him. One of the bags opened, and in gusts of wind sweeping down Main Street, a swirl of paper currency tumbled down the road like giant snowflakes. Jim Bob felt something sting the top of his head as his Stetson, still red with Waylon Burke's blood, was swept away. That stinging sensation became a sharper pain. He touched the spot with his fingertips, feeling something wet in his hair. And there was more he couldn't see. His fingers traced a deep gash running from the front of his scalp to the back of his head. He glanced at his fingertips and saw that they were dripping blood. And then blood ran from his hairline down his forehead into his eyes.
I'm shot. Son of a bitch, I'm shot!
Jim Bob fell against the bricks then, too shocked to think of reloading at the moment. The pain across the top of his skull was worsening. Blood began to pour down his cheeks, staining the front of his shirt.
No! I'm shot, Marshal Earp! Somebody come help before I bleed to death! Marshal, can you hear me? I'm shot right on top of my head and I'm bleeding something awful! Oh, don't leave me here to die. Somebody's got to come over here and help me get to the doctor's house. I'm going to die.
I hope you die real slow. You done went and shot Frankie down, you son of a bitch.
Jim Bob wiped blood away from his face. Then his gaze happened to fall on Waylon Burke's body. Clouds of dark flies hovered over his corpse now.
We're all gonna die. Every last one of us is gonna die on account of that damn money.
He thought about his mother then, back in Clay County, Missouri, wishing she could be there with him before he bled to death. He hadn't wanted the deputy's job in the first place, but in the absence of any employment until the big herds came up from Texas, he felt he had no choice. It was either become a deputy or clean out spittoons and mop floors at one of the town saloons.
A part-time deputy, earning less than $20 a month.
Jim Bob felt Bear's skull where his skin was parted and the pain had intensified.
I could have took that job down at the livery shoveling out horse stalls for $10 a month. I'd have been alive. My head wouldn't hurt like this.
Suddenly, Jim Bob felt like someone had put a hot branding iron across the top of his skull.
We're coming out! Any sumbitch takes a shot at us, we are gonna kill him and every friend he's got! We'll burn this whole goddamn town plumb to the ground! I hope all you sons of bitches are listening, because we damn sure mean what we say!
We're coming out too! The first gunshot I hear, I'm gonna blow this little lady's head clean off! Her name's Sarah Jane Peabody. Any of you sons of bitches want Miss Peabody's death on your conscience, you start shooting.
Jim Bob closed his eyes. Miss Peabody was about the most gentle woman in Dodge City. She played the foot pump organ at the First Baptist Church every Sunday morning. For some bank robber to be willing to kill her seemed too cruel for him to even think about right then.
I warned you! Say goodbye to Miss Jane!
Oh my God! No, what is that?
Jesus. Somebody shot Miss Peabody.
Next some bitch we gonna kill is this banker fella. Name's Fegan. He's the next one to die unless all the shooting stops.
Oh. Oh, hell. No.
Jim Bob was losing consciousness. The gray fog was creeping closer to him, enveloping him like a blanket. And no matter how hard he tried, he could not keep his eyes open. He slid down the brick wall, resting his bleeding head on the cool surface. His thoughts drifted back to Clay County and all the troubles in that part of Missouri after the war. A gang of mounted rebels led by a fella named Quantrill had come blazing through Missouri and Kansas, killing Union sympathizers, burning their homes and barns to the ground. Among them was a man calling himself Bloody Bill Anderson. And opinions differed as to whether or not Bloody Bill had been killed right after the war was over. In far western Kansas territory, all sorts of reports surfaced about Anderson and a gang of cutthroats still pillaging carpetbagger holdings. Someone had mentioned the possibility that Anderson might come to Dodge City on one of his raids. Jim Bob's eyes batted shut. He wasn't thinking about Bill Anderson then. In a type of dream, he saw himself sitting by the edge of a muddy creek, holding a fishing pole.
Jim Bob! Time for supper!
Mama?
Jim Bob felt hungry as well as thirsty. He wished for some of his mother's sweet cornbread covered with butter and a splash of cane syrup.
God, do something.
In a daze, Jim Bob opened his shotgun, fumbling to pull out the spent shells, knowing he was expected to help Marshal Earp and the others to win this fight. But when he tried to put fresh loads into his gun, his fingers felt numb and they wouldn't work right.
I can't.
That scream was the last sound Jim Bob heard, and he could not be altogether sure it wasn't his own. Smoke had listened to the young deputy's cries for help, but he had no way to go to the man's aid without exposing himself to gunfire on two sides. Many times, the innocent became the most tragic of all victims in duels between men with guns. A gun was no better than the man who used it. The amount of savvy he had, knowing when to shoot and when to wait for the odds to change in his favor. Well, the odds were still long against Smoke and his cowboys and the lawmen sworn to protect Dodge City, although Smoke had done his part to change things. Leaving three men dead in an alley behind the bank, his latest victim being an Indian with a long knife scar on his face, he made his way to a side street with his rifle, pausing at the corner of a building. The bank robbers were coming out, no doubt with the money from both vaults. Smoke hoped Cal and Pearlie had the good sense to wait for an opportunity. When the gang tried to leave town, they would be exposed to riflemen on rooftops and to Marshal Earp, along with his remaining deputy, if the last deputy was still alive and able to shoot. Looking down the side street, Smoke saw two bodies. Blood had pooled around both raiders, attracting flies. The wind was picking up from the northwest. In a matter of minutes, the gang would ride out of Dodge with every cent both banks had, including the money Smoke had come all the way from Sugarloaf to bring back to Sally, the profits from their crossbreeding program.
Well, I'll be goddamned if I let him do that. Not without a fight.
Smoke had given him as much fight as he could without risking his life in a careless fashion. But as it became clear that the bank robbers were close to making their escape, it was high time he gave those land pirates a lesson in mountain man justice. Bent over, rifle at the ready, Smoke made his way cautiously to Main Street, where he hesitated at a corner of the town's lone barber shop.
Okay, boys. I'm ready for you to make your move to pull out. I got 7 shells in my Winchester, and 12 more in a pair of pistols. and I intend to make you all pay dearly for what you've done.
Tilting his head, Smoke gave the rooftop where Pearly lay a hidden glance. Then, his eyes wandered down to Cal's position before he returned his attention to Main Street.
Come on, you bastards.
Smoke took a look around the corner of the barber shop. Two men came out of the bank, laden with sacks of money. It was a shot too good to pass up. A man in a fringed buckskin flung four bags of money over his head and fell off the boardwalk. Smoke's second bullet struck a slope-shouldered cowboy who was wearing a bandana over his face, catching him between his shirt pockets while he made an attempt to load bags of money onto a nervous bay.
Congratulations! You just got your bank president killed!
A tall, thin man in a vest and blue suit coat was pushed out onto the boardwalk, staggering to maintain his balance. Smoke pulled back behind the barber shop, feeling white-hot rage swell in his chest. Without knowing how many more innocent people were held hostage inside either of the banks, shooting at the outlaws would be too costly in human lives. He was sure of what Preacher would have done in the same situation, trying to battle with men inside a town. He would wait until the robbers rode off with their ill-gotten gains, and then he would go after them in surroundings where the advantage would change in favor of a man who knew wild country and its secrets, and the ways of stalking men who knew less about staying alive with no buildings to protect them. It wouldn't matter to Preacher if there were no mountains to hide him as he went about seeking revenge. Preacher was a man who had mastered the art of hiding in plain sight, a fact known only briefly to many of his enemies before he took their lives. And this was a gift Preacher had given young Kirby Jensen so many years before, careful instruction in the stalking of men. Smoke decided it would save lives to let the raiders leave Dodge in peace. Then he would go after them, killing off a few at a time. He rested his rifle against the building and cupped his hands around his mouth, facing the marshal's office.
Marshaler! This is Smoke Jensen! Let him ride out with the money! Too much blood's already been spilled!
Whatever you say, Jensen. My deputy and me are laying down our guns.
Pearly! Cal! Don't shoot when they come outside! Let them go!
Smoke didn't need an answer from Cal or Pearly to know they would follow his instructions.
This better not be no trick! We got us another woman here, and we'll blow her goddamn head off if anybody shoots at us! We're coming out!
Smoke drew back, turning for the alley so he could get back up on the roof now. He wanted to see what direction the outlaws went while Cal and Pearly were fetching his horse. He raced back up the alleyway, jumping atop the empty flour keg to climb up on the roof of the cafe. Removing his hat, he peered over the false front of Martha's as several men came cautiously from the front door of the bank, a woman being shoved in front of one gunman who was holding a pistol to the back of her head. A heavily muscled man with a black beard glanced up at the rooftops, holding a rifle, while five or six men began loading bags of money onto a horse and a brown mule. Turning to the front of the savings bank, he saw eight or nine men move cautiously out on the boardwalk with guns and more bags of money. One man in particular stood out, an older gent wearing a Confederate cavalryman's hat and a gray tunic. His pants were stuffed into the stovepipe tops of cavalry boots. His long hair turned silver with age, and his face had a craggy look about it. He wore a curious yellow Confederate officer's sash around his waist, and below it, he carried a pair of low-slung pistols in cutaway holsters.
Look at you. I reckon you could be Bloody Bill Anderson. But whoever you are, sooner or later, I'm gonna kill you for what you've done here.
There was so much blood in the street and on various boardwalks, it appeared that someone had meant to paint the town and its main road a dark red color. At some rendezvous point away from Dodge City, Smoke intended to add a splash of the same color to whatever ground happened to be occupied by this outlaw thug when he caught up to him and began killing him one or two at a time. As many as he could before he moved to another position to kill again. He could scarcely control his anger anymore, looking down upon what the raiders had done to unarmed folks. He would make them pay when the time and circumstances were right. A few outlaws started gathering up loose horses, still wary, keeping their guns at the ready while they went about bringing mounts to the front of each bank. Some of the robbers began to mount up, covering the rooftop in the front of the marshal's office with shotguns and pistols and rifles.
I hope Marshal Earp and his deputies are smart enough to let him ride out without taking a shot.
Earp would likely send a telegram to the army post at Fort Larned, asking for their help. Smoke's experience with soldiers had convinced him that in most cases, the cavalry was virtually useless. By the time they got to a particular spot where there had been some trouble, troublemakers were usually long gone. But in this instance, another revenge seeker would take up the outlaws' trail long before a company of cavalrymen could get to Dodge, a man who understood how to exact vengeance. The last bank robber was in the saddle now, and the silver-haired gent in the Confederate uniform gave a signal to the others to start riding, proving he was leader of the bunch, as Smoke had known all along. The group of outlaws passed beneath the cafe as Smoke dropped out of sight. Then he raised up just enough to get a quicker count of the men he would be after.
Less than 15.
Between Smoke and his men and Marshal Earp, he had thinned the robbers' ranks considerably. Not that it gave Smoke that much satisfaction. He wasn't going to be satisfied until the last outlaw was dead and the money was back in the bank vaults. Earp's face was waxy white when he met Smoke in the middle of Main Street.
I sent Cody to the telegraph office to get off a wire to Fort Larned. Cody took a slug in his shoulder. Jim Bob's over yonder unconscious with a wound to his head. We'll need the doc as quick as he can get here. What folks are still alive are hurt real bad. Timmy, the boy with blood all over his face, lost both of his eyes when they got him with a shotgun.
Smoke nodded grimly, watching Pearly and Cal hurry toward him from a side street.
We didn't have no choice, Marshal. They were killing too many innocent people.
The army will catch them sooner or later.
Not if I get to them first.
You aim to go after them yourself? Why, you ain't got but two men to help you.
They won't go with me. I'm leaving them to watch over our cow herd.
You can't be serious.
Dead serious.
There's too many of them.
Depends.
What do you want us to do, boss?
You keep a close eye on our cows. Make sure they get lots of hay and water till I get back.
I just knowed you was gonna say that. You aim to track them down and kill them.
That's right. Every last one of them. Including that gent wearing the gray uniform.
Now, I figured that was Bloody Bill Anderson.
I don't give a damn who he is.
I don't believe this. That just one man would set out after more than a dozen armed outlaws. You won't stand a chance.
Maybe not. Won't know till I get there.
Cal hurried up beside Smoke as he was headed down to the cattle pens beside the railroad tracks to saddle his Palouse. Smoke's mind was on something else, tracking the bank robbers wherever they were going, and he hardly even noticed the boy walking next to him.
Wanted to ask you something, Mr. Jensen.
Ask.
Pearly told me there come a time back when you was a whole lot younger than me, when Preacher took you off with him to tangle with a bunch of honest-to-goodness bad men.
I was some younger. It wasn't of my choosing. Things happened. I didn't have much selection when the time came. I reckon you could say it was us or them.
Then I say it's time you took me with you now. I give you my word I won't get in the way and that I'll be a help catching them crooks.
Too many of them this time. If it wasn't going to be so one-sided, I might take you along. This ain't exactly the right sort of situation for you to cut your teeth on.
Don't matter how many there is, I want to go, and I know I'm ready. I won't let you down. Honest, I won't. I can carry my share of the load, and I'm right decent shot with a rifle.
There's just some things about slipping up on a man you ain't learned yet.
You can teach me now. Couldn't be no better chance than right now.
Sally would kill me if something happened to you.
Ain't nothing gonna happen. I'll do exactly like you saying. Won't give you no argument.
Smoke gave it some consideration. He hadn't even been as old as Cal when he and Preacher and Emmett had tangled with that bunch up in the northwest part of Kansas Territory. But Cal was awkward at times, careless, like when he forgot to look for the hump in the bay colt's back when they left Sugarloaf. And a mistake like that could get him killed.
It's real clear them outlaws got plenty of experience under them. This would be the wrong bunch for you to cross trails with.
I ain't scared, Mr. Jensen.
Being scared's got nothing to do with it.
I'm nearly begging for the chance. I shot down one of them robbers when they rode in, hit a moving target with this here rifle. That ought to be worth something, and I done sworn I'd do just what you said to do.
They got to the corral fence, where the horses grazed on a mound of prairie hay. Smoke couldn't quite make up his mind about Cal's request. In most respects, the boy was old enough to take care of himself in a tight spot. However, the spot where they met up with this batch of bad men might get even tighter than what was ordinary.
Pearlie could use your help here.
Pearlie's able to take care of these here cows without no help from me, and you know it, Mr. Jensen. How come you ain't got no faith I can handle myself?
I do have faith in you, son. That isn't what's eating at me. These men will be after or seasoned to being hunted, especially if it's Bloody Bill Anderson's boys. They've been hounded all over the middle of this country by lawmen and the cavalry. They won't be easy to catch unawares. They'll be expecting somebody to be close on their heels. This job's gonna take a man who's done this sort of thing before.
I can do it! You just gotta give me a chance to prove myself.
What Cal said struck a deep chord within Smoke. There had been a time when Preacher had given him the chance to prove he was a man, a fighting man. But when Smoke thought about what Sally would say, he hesitated. If anything happened to Cal, he would have hell to pay with the woman he loved. Cal had become, in a sense, like a son. If Smoke brought him back to Sugarloaf in a pine box, or with a debilitating injury that left him a cripple for the rest of his life, Sally would never forgive him.
I figured I earned the chance. I've done everything you and Miss Jensen ever asked me to do, and time or two I showed I had the nerve when it comes to handling a gun.
It won't be nerves you'll need. This is mostly open land to the south of here till we strike the nations. You need the know-how when it comes to slipping up on a man where there ain't enough natural cover.
You can learn me. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to learn how. I've seen my share of blood. Them poor folks who got shot back yonder deserve some justice. I hadn't wanted to say nothing about it, but it seems like you and Miss Jensen don't never aim to stop treating men like a little kid. I'm darn near full grown. Time I learned a few things about staying alive, like when Preacher showed you how.
There's no doubt you can learn it, son. You've got plenty of smarts. A time or two you've shown a tendency towards distractions, like when the Bay Colt tossed you off.
That was different. Was no reason to be so all-fired careful then.
Now that's where you're wrong. There's always a good reason to be careful. A man never knows what's out there looking to end his days. You can't use that one on me.
How about the real reason I won't go?
And what's this real reason?
Making them sorry sons of bitches pay. I was looking right down on that kid they shot in the face. Marshal Earp said that boy was stone blind on account of it. It sticks in my craw like sand when some owl hoot with a gun shoots a man that ain't armed, and that was just a youngster.
Made you mad, did it?
Yes, sir, it did. Makes me want to take a gun to the rotten bastard who done it. It don't seem right he can just blind that boy and ride off with sacks full of money. If we don't catch up to him, they'll hide down in Injun territory. And won't nobody ever make that bastard who shot that kid's eyeballs out of his head pay?
Justice is the job for the law, Cal. We don't carry badges or have any legal jurisdiction in this affair.
You know damn well nobody's gonna catch him unless we do. And we gotta get on that trail damn quick.
Sally was as much of a concern as the boy's safety. If Sally found out he had taken Cal with him after more than a dozen killers, Smoke could count on sleeping out in the bunkhouse with Pearlie all the next winter. Maybe well into the next spring. But there was something about the way Cal said what was on his mind that touched an inner part of Smoke's soul. He understood as well as any man what it was like to want justice for folks who couldn't defend themselves.
Please let me go, Mr. Jensen. It's something I just gotta do.
Get your horse saddled. And bring our gear and our saddlebags down from the hotel. Make sure we've got some coffee and fat back. We could be on the trail of those robbers for a week or more.
I'll be back before you know it. I was gone. I'll tell Pearly what we aim to do!
Smoke turned back to the corral fence, hoping he'd made the right choice. Boys have to come of age sometime, he thought, realizing that some of them did it earlier than others. But if Cal got himself in trouble during this manhunt, Smoke knew he would never be able to forgive himself. And a little woman up in Colorado territory would be even less likely to overlook what he'd done, no matter what reasons or explanations he gave her. She had taken to Cal almost from the first day he went to Sugarloaf, and she mothered him like her own children. Pearly gave Smoke a wary look.
You ain't really gonna let that boy go with you, is she?
Cal was across the corral saddling the stud and his bay gelding.
He sort of begged me into it, Pearly. I reckon he's old enough.
Well, what he ain't got enough of is good sense. He ain't smart enough to pour his own water out of his boot.
He was smart enough to put a cockle burr in your boot, Pearly.
Wait, you know dang well that's different, boss. Cal ain't hardly more than out of diapers.
He's old enough. High time he learned how to survive when he's up against tough situations.
Pearly made a disgusted face, and Smoke knew it was because he cared for the boy.
This is a hell of a lot more than a tough situation. Them some genuine bad hombres, and they proved it here today.
They didn't show me much. Yellow bastard shot down unarmed women and kids and the banker, besides that old man who came out with his goose gun. Don't take a lot of courage or savvy with a firearm to do what they did. They're just a bunch of greedy men who had an advantage. Leastways, that's what they figured. I aim to show them just how wrong they were.
Pearly watched Cal leading both horses through a corral gate toward him.
Well, I won't sleep a damn wink the whole time you two is gone.
I doubt we'll get a hell of a lot of sleep ourselves, Pearly. Those boys are going to be hard to catch in this open country without them knowing we're back there.
Just watch out for that youngin' best you can, Smoke. Only don't tell him I said so.
You got a soft side, Pearly?
Hell no! Just worry about what Mr. Jensen's gonna say if he don't come back in one piece.
He has to grow up one of these days. I'm hoping Sally will understand.
She ain't got no understanding when it comes to that there boy. She quit fixing me bear claws for a whole damn month one time after I got on him for leaving that south pasture gate open so them weaned calves got back with the cows. Never was so hungry in all my born days.
Cal walked up then, leading the Palouse stud and his bay. He had his rifle booted, with their saddlebags tied behind the cantles of their saddles.
Ready to ride.
You's ready to ride into a mess. You ain't plumb dry behind them ears yet. I'm against what you're doing. Only it don't make one damn bit of difference to me if you're hard-headed enough to want to do it anyhow.
Good, because I'm doing it anyhow.
Smoke booted his Winchester and climbed aboard the stud.
Take good care of our steers, Pearly. We'll be back quick as we can get this job done.
Sure do hope the two you can get it done.
We'll manage. You tell Marshal Lurk we'll be back with the town's money as soon as we find the right spot to take it back from those yellow bastards.
Hip. Smoke led Cal away from the cattle pens, across two sets of railroad tracks, and then headed due south. Marshal Earp came down the street toward Pearl.
I was aiming to tell Mr. Jensen we couldn't get that wire through to Fort Larned. Somebody must have cut the telegraph line someplace east of here. Clifford Barnes at the telegraph office has been trying to put a message through ever since those outlaws came to town.
Don't take no real deep thinker to figure out who it was. Them bank robbers done it. According to the way Smoke feels about the cavalry, wouldn't have done no hell of a lot of good, nohow.
Yeah, I ain't got much faith in the army, neither. That leaves Mr. Jensen and your partner to handle things by themselves. Now, no offense to Mr. Jensen intended, but I ain't got much faith in them two having a chance against so many shootists. Your boss man and your partner are liable to get killed.
Won't worry Smoke none at all, Marshal. Fact is, he'd rather do the job all by his lonesome anyways. The cavalry outfit would only get in his way.
Is Jensen really that tough a customer?
Toughest I've ever known. And he was worse about killing men back when he was younger, before he settled down.
Looks like he killed three men back in that alley behind the cafe. Then I saw him shoot down several more. Then there was that pair he got while he was on them roofs. They don't seem all that natural. How just one man can be so all fired good at killing folks. Yeah, I'm sure this robbery was the doing of Bloody Bill Anderson. And he's got one hell of a bad reputation for killing folks himself. If them two meet up south of here, even as tough as you say Smoke Jensen is, he won't stand a snowball's chance in hell against so many hard-nosed killers as them.
You could be eating them words. My money's on Smoke and the boy. And yeah, I sure do hope that boy don't jump in front of no bullet when Smoke ain't around to see after him like he ought.
The kid did look a bit green.
He's young yet, but he's got the best teacher he could have.
Even if Jensen is every bit as good as you say, there's too many Anderson's men. I hope this won't be the last time I set eyes on your boss man. He's taking one hell of a big bite this time.
He can chew it. I've seen him come out of worse messes than this one without a scratch. It may take him some time, but he'll be back with the town's money, sure as snuff makes spit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'll try to form up a posse, only I don't figure there's many who'll ride out with me. Most folks who live here are businessmen or out-of-work cowboys waiting for the herds to come up the Chisholm. Not many who can shoot straight. One of my deputies is hurt bad, and the other's got a notch in his arm that won't let him sit a horse. That don't leave me too many choices.
Well, I'd go, only Smoke told me to stay with the herd. One thing I ain't gonna do is go against none of Smoke's orders. I'm sorry, Marshal, but I'd sooner tangle with a grizzly as face Smoke Jensen if I didn't do like he told me to.
I understand. Maybe Clifford can find where that wire's been cut. Right now, I'd better see to helping the wounded over to the doc's place. That boy Timmy is blind as a bat. And there's others hurt bad. No telling how many are dead. I hadn't had time to start a count yet.
Pearly knew that the death toll would be high. It was small consolation. There was also a goodly number of Anderson's gang decorating the streets and alleys across Dodge. Bloody Bill had paid a high price to empty out two bank vaults, but he was about to pay the highest price of all, in Pearly's estimation, for making the mistake of pulling a raid on Dodge City's banks while Smoke Jensen was in town. Jack Starr was waiting for an opportunity, although he knew Bill would be expecting something from any one of his men. As they pushed their horses south, Jack counted 13 survivors of the raid. A damn unlucky number for a man who was superstitious. But two of Bill's most loyal followers died in the fight that day, and that would be a help. Harley Suggins and Scarface had been killed trying to bring down the big cowboy who kept moving around on Dodge City's rooftops. Jack wondered who the guy was and how come he was so damned hard to kill. Somebody calling himself Smoke Jensen and yelled across the street to the city marshal, telling him to stop shooting. If Jensen was the man who had killed Harley and Scarface Parker, it was a name Jack didn't recognize. One or two more steadfast supporters of Bloody Bill remained alive, riding on either flank. It would be hard to shoot Bill in the back with both of them underlings around. So close to Bill, but killing Bill was a chore that needed to be done. Bill had been losing his mind the last year or two, getting badly drunk, rambling on about the old days, the war. His plan to escape into the nations was a stupid move, and it meant they'd be living on beans and fry bread for months instead of heading out to California or someplace where they could enjoy the money they'd just stolen. Bill was living in the past, believing that all they needed to do was hide from the army and the law. But the law had gotten a hell of a lot smarter lately. And there were telegraph wires and railroad lines running all over the place now. But their ranks so dangerously thin, they couldn't fight off a big company of cavalry or a posse of any size. It was time to take Bill out of the picture so his damned foolish hard-headedness wouldn't get them all killed or caught. Joe Lucas rode off to Bill's right. Lucas was dangerous, a man with eyes in the back of his head. Shorty Russell was the type who'd kill a man in his sleep if Bill gave the order, and he was on Bill's left as Bill led the gang and four pack animals loaded with money toward the Kansas line. What Jack needed most was an ally, someone he could trust when he shot Bill and Lucas and Russell off their horses. a man who would watch his backside while he told the rest of the gang what his plan was, to cut up the money in equal shares and split up, making them that much harder to track down. But Jack wasn't quite sure who to trust among the survivors. He rode at the rear with Big Buster Young, a quiet man whom nobody knew much about, yet he had been with him for several years and never once shirked a job or his responsibility. If Jack remembered right, Buster was from Texas. He decided to take Buster into his confidence. He leaned out of the saddle towards Buster.
The army's gonna come after us hard, Buster.
The pair trotted over a rocky knob 50 yards behind the others.
We ain't got enough men left to put up much of a fight if they catch us. I've tried to talk Bill into splitting up the money and splitting up the gang for a spell. He won't listen to a word I say.
Buster glanced over his shoulder, the same shoulder where he carried a sawed-off Greener shotgun on a leather strap. He wore a Colt pistol in a cross-pull holster.
We all damn near got killed back yonder. That son of a bitch shooting down from that little cafe damn near got me before I could get in the bank with Bill. Bill was talking plumb crazy inside there. He shot Lee Waller himself when Lee hit that banker too hard over the head. Said he didn't have no use for a man without good sense. I got to thinking, maybe Bill aimed to kill us all. His eyes got this funny look to him.
Bill ain't right in the head no more, Buster. He's liable to turn on every one of us and shoot us down for our shares of the money. Lucas and Russell will back his play if he decides he wants a bigger share. And I've been keeping my eyes on Bill since we rode out of town, and he don't act right.
He damn sure don't.
One thing we can do is make sure Bill don't shoot us.
Well, how'd we do that?
We could shoot him down first before he kills us. Most of the rest of the boys would go along with cutting up the money now and ride in different directions, maybe in pairs. You and me could take our shares and head out to California, or maybe to Texas, and cross over the Mexican border where the law can't touch us.
Maybe that ain't such a bad idea, Jack. Only, we'd best be damn sure we done it right. Bill and Joe and Shorty will kill both of us quicker than we can sneeze if we don't get them first. Mexico would be the safest place to hide. We'd have enough money to live like kings down there.
Yeah, but we better do it quick. We'll ride up behind them like we need to talk about something. I'll shoot Bill as soon as I'm close enough. You take Shorty with that scattergun, and I'll go for Lucas whilst you cover everybody else with your second barrel and pistol. Then, I'll explain what we's aiming to do. We'll find us a low spot so nobody can skyline us, and we'll count the money and cut it up 10 ways, unless we have to shoot one or two more.
It's gonna be risky as hell, but I'll go along with it. You ride up behind Bill, because he's gonna be the most dangerous. I can stay off to one side and blow Shorty plumb out his saddle before I wheel around and cover the rest. But watch out Lucas don't get you. He's fast as hell. He's got a nose for trouble when it's behind him.
Let's do it.
Jack, his heart pumping, urged his horse to a faster gait. Bill Anderson would be wary. Then he did trust Jack, and he wasn't likely to suspect anything was wrong until it was too late. Jogging past the other raiders and the heavily laden pack animals, Jack kept his hand away from his gun. He decided he wouldn't reach for his dance until he was close, very close. He came within 20 or 30 feet of Bill's back before Bill and Joe Lucas both glanced backward. Jack grinned and gave them both a nod. From the corner of his eye, he saw Buster riding a little behind him and to his right. Bill and Joe turned their gazes toward Buster, and then Bill gave a silent nod. The gesture bewildered Jack, taking him by surprise. Jack knew that sound, and he looked quickly over at Buster. Buster had his Greener aimed directly at him.
He was gonna shoot you in the back, Bill, just like you said he was planning to do. Wanted me to help him do it.
You get half of his share along with yours, Buster. I never did trust the sumbitch. Just leave him there to die. Fetch his horse and let's keep pushing.
Their trail was easy to follow. Shod horses crossing barren ground. Tracks spread some distance apart, indicating that the outlaws were pushing their horses as hard as they could. Smoke kept an eye on the horizon. Far to the south, when they rode higher hills, You could see scattered trees in the distance. Near the Kansas border, they would come to the Cimarron River. And beyond that, they would be in Injun territory. Anderson was running for the most lawless stretch of land he could find, where a handful of federal marshals tried to keep peace and lands given to various Injun tribes after the big treaty at Medicine Lodge. Cal was studying the hoof prints.
They've been keeping their horses on a long trot, Mr. Jensen. Won't be long till they have to stop and rest them.
They'll pick a low place where they'll be harder to see. We'll have to be careful we don't ride up on them unawares.
I got it figured they'll keep rear guards posted because they know somebody'll come after them.
That's a fact. Might give us a chance to take a few of them on. That rear guard, you called it. If they stray too far from the main bunch, I might be able to slip up behind them.
But there ain't no cover.
There's plenty of cover out here, if a man knows how to use it.
Just some brush and tumbleweeds.
It's enough.
Then you'll slip up on them on foot?
Be the easiest way if they're far enough from the rest of the gang so I can get behind them.
Don't seem like nearly enough places to hide to me.
It's what some Indian tribes use, son. A white man, unless he's been shown a few tricks, is looking for the shape of a man on a horse, or a man walking upright. Most men are looking for what they expect to see, and they aren't ready for something else.
You aim to crawl on your belly?
It depends. I'll have to wait and see what they give me.
If they're smart, they won't give you much.
Most men aren't as smart as they think. You learn to use any kind of cover there is. Cover that'll hide a man.
That's some of what Preacher taught you?
Some. There's a whole lot more to it. You've got to learn it a little bit at a time. Take some practice to get it right and not make any fatal mistakes.
Even a man crawling on his belly and his brush won't hide from a pair of good eyes, seems like to me.
That's because you know what I'm aiming to do, son. These boys we're after expect a posse or the cavalry to come riding hell for leather on their tracks. They won't be looking for one man on foot who understands how a pair of eyes can play tricks on the one doing the looking.
I'm not real sure I understand, Mr. Jensen, but I'll pay real close attention. I can learn.
That's the reason I brought you along, Cal. If my wife had any idea what I was doing, she'd yell so loud we hear her all the way from Sugarloaf to Kansas.
Just then, they rode up on Jack Starr's body. They had been warned by circling buzzards that something dead awaited them, a fresh kill of some kind. When Smoke saw the corpse, he recognized him as one of the bank robbers.
Appears they've already had some kind of disagreement.
Cal's cheeks were no longer as dark as they had been. He gazed down at the dead man a few moments.
Shot at real close range. Tore the hell out of his face. Why would they shoot one of their own, Mr. Jensen?
Can't say for sure, but maybe this one got greedy. Wanted a bigger share.
Shotgun makes one hell of a mess, don't it?
It's good for close quarters fighting, but it don't have much range.
You hardly ever use one, but you get real close to the men you're after sometimes. And it seems like you always use a knife on them.
A knife's quieter. Kind of depends on how many of them there is.
You gonna use a knife on them rear guards when we find them?
The situation will tell me what to use. If I can, I'll do it quiet. If I can't, I'll do it any way I can and change positions real quick.
Change positions? That's so the rest of the gang won't come to the sound of your gun?
Most times. But once in a while, you want to draw somebody else to the sound you make. Only you gotta be ready for them when they show up.
How come you don't ever act scared, Mr. Jensen? Don't seem like you show no fear, even when you go up against a bunch of killers.
Smoke nudged his stud with his boot heels. They rode away from the corpse side by side.
Fear's a funny thing, Cal. It can do a fella some good if he understands what fear is. It's a warning. So long as you don't let it get the best of you, it can be a help.
A help? Tell me how being afraid can help you when it makes a fella nervous.
You pay more attention to little things. The sounds around you, the smells, the way a bird flies, or the way a good range-bred horse behaves when it smells something unfamiliar. It's nature's way of telling you to be careful.
I think I understand, Mr. Jensen. Only sometimes, when I get scared of something, it gives me the shivers. All I can think about is getting the hell out of wherever I'm at.
Most often, that's the smartest thing to do. It takes a few years before you know when to run and when to hold your ground.
Yonder they are.
Cal was lying on his belly in a clump of sagebrush, overlooking a dry stream bed that wound its way from east to west.
Looks like they's passing around bottles of whiskey.
Smoke was intent upon what he saw below the hilltop, and he didn't answer for a spell.
All the better. Whiskey robs a man of the best edges on his senses. A man who's half drunk don't hear or see nearly so good.
I still can't see no rear guard like you figured they'd have.
There's two of them, back this way about a quarter mile.
Cal focused all his attention on the land between the hill and the dry creek.
I still don't see a damn thing, Mr. Jensen. Not a single thing nowhere.
Look to the left of that big rock. See how the brush in the back of it is laying down? That's where a pair of careless men walked up to that rock to keep an eye on things, while the main bunch rested their horses and had a little drink or two.
I see what looks like a trail of some kind leading up to that rock, but I can't see nobody. Nary a soul.
That's because they've hid behind the rock. All you can see is the trail they left behind while they got to that spot on foot.
Smoke walked down to the Palouse and hung his Stetson on his saddle horn.
Are you going after him?
I'll see if I can slip up on them before they move. You stay here and hold the horses. Don't look over that hilltop, no matter what you hear. Don't matter what happens, you stay put. You hear?
Yes, sir. I'll be right here waiting on you.
If you hear a gunshot, climb on this bay and head back to Dodge just as fast as these horses can travel.
I won't leave you if and you're in trouble, no matter what.
I admire that in you, son. But this is one time when you do exactly what I tell you to do. If you hear a gun, it'll mean they saw me before I got to them. Don't give me no argument. You get up on that horse and ride.
Yes, sir.
Dewey Hyde tipped back the bottle of whiskey and took a thirsty pull. Sammy McCoy was awaiting his turn with the jug as they sat behind a boulder, watching the amber fluid drain down Dewey's throat.
Buster sure did blow old Jack in half. How did Bill know Jack was aiming to double-cross him like that?
Dewey ran his sleeve across his lips before he gave the bottle to Sammy.
It was easy, I reckon. Jack kept talking about going west to California, how much he didn't like the notion we'd hide in the nations for a spell. Bill put two and two together. I heard Bill tell Buster to keep an eye on Jack for him. Bill said the same thing to Harley Suggins, only that crazy sumbitch on top of the cafe got to Harley first afore Buster did.
Bill don't hardly trust nobody.
I reckon that's how come he's still alive, Sammy. He don't sleep like most men do. I swear, he keeps one eye open all night.
Sammy took the bottle and drank deeply as well.
There's three of us who'd do damn near anything Bill told them to do.
That'd be Shorty and Joe and Buster.
Right. Buster don't worry me all that much. Not the way Jack Starr did. But with him being dead now, I'd keep an eye on Joe Lucas. He kind of scares me sometimes.
Bill Anderson scares me all the time. Shorty's a badass with a blade, all right, but Joe's the one to watch. If Bill thinks you're fixing to double-cross him, he'll have Joe put a bullet plumb through your heart.
Shorty'd kill a man in his bedroll. Joe'd do it whilst he's looking at him square in the eye.
What was that noise yonder?
It made a little rattling sound. Maybe it's just a rattlesnake.
Didn't sound like no goddamn rattler. Damn near sounded like somebody took a rock and chucked it off in them bushes.
Oh, you're hearing things, Dewey. It was just a snake.
The two of them were looking toward a late day sun at the brush close to the rock where they were hidden when a razor-sharp steel blade slashed across Dewey's windpipe. Sammy whirled, clawing for his Colt, staring up at a huge figure crouched behind him.
Hey, who the hell are you?
Adios, fellas.
Joe Lucas stared down at the bodies. He turned in the saddle to speak to Bill Anderson. Bill's face was tight with anger.
Whoever done it had to be slick. This is damn hard country to slip up on a man. Some bitch has to be part Injun.
If we had the time, I'd have everybody fan out and hunt him down. He's got a horse hid somewheres. Can't be far. I'll hand him one more thing. He's a gutsy bastard, getting close enough to use a knife so the rest of us wouldn't hear him.
Shorty Russell had a dark look on his face.
Oh, hell, I ain't worried. Means two more shares for the rest of us. Dewey was dumber than a rock, if you ask me. And Sammy was damn near an idiot with them gotcha eyes. We ain't no worse off without him.
I think I know who 'tis. That big son of a bitch who throwed Harley off that roof done this. I got this feeling he's the one.
He ain't got no posse with him. or they'd be riding down on us. Having just one sumbitch behind us proves he's crazy, whoever he is. Probably some goddamn pig farmer who lost all his money when we robbed the banks. Gonna be a hero and try to get everybody's money back.
We can't afford the time to look for him. He'll come back. He won't give up, not after he got this done so easy. Sammy and Dewey was drunk or this couldn't have happened. Ain't no place to hide in this miserable country. The thing to worry about is if he's got a sharp so he can shoot us from long range a few at a time. We ain't got no long guns with us.
I'll ride back and track him down. The rest of you keep heading south. I'll catch up soon as I kill the sneaky bastard.
Yeah, maybe I ought to go too, if there's more than just one.
I reckon that's a good idea. Two'd be better than one looking for him. I owe the son of a bitch if it's the same fella who killed Harley and Sykes.
I figure he got Scarface Parker likewise.
We got proof he ain't no tin horn. All the same, he can't outrun no bullet. You ain't gonna get close enough to use no knife on me. Won't be the same as slipping up on Dewey and Sammy.
Find him and kill him! Bring me his goddamn head so I can tie it to my saddle horn! Harley been riding with me since the war. I don't take it lightly when somebody kills my friends.
We'll find him. Just make sure the boys save me and Shorty some of that whiskey.
Shorty Russell hurried his sorrel up beside Lucas's yellow dun as Bill turned back to rejoin the others. They rode toward the crest of a hill with rifles ready. A moment later, Russell glanced over his shoulder to make sure Bill was out of earshot before he spoke to Lucas.
How come you volunteered us for this job, Joe? Looks like me and you ought to be playing it safe so we can live to spend our share of that money.
I figure this is safer. It's gonna be dark in a few hours. If this sneaky son of a bitch is as good as he appears to be, he'll come for us after sundown. But if we find him first and kill him, won't be no reason to worry about the dark.
I don't figure he's really all that good. Sammy McCoy's eyes were so bad crossed he couldn't see a buffalo bull charging straight at him. Dewey Hyde was just plain dumb. Harley was getting old himself. And Sykes never struck me as near careful enough. That breed, on the other hand, would have been hard to kill for might near anybody. If this same fella got Scarface, we could have our hands full bringing him down.
Bill's worried. He had robbing them banks figured as being easy. Only we lost damn near half of them to come with us.
Well, Bill wasn't helping things none shooting Lee like he did. Bill's temper's been real bad lately. He don't act quite right sometimes.
He's still smarter than most, and dangerous as hell, too. He knew Jack was gonna try and double-cross him. He sent Buster back to keep an eye on Jack. Bill can smell a rat, same as he always could. I grant you, he ain't the same as he was, but I'd have to give it a hell of a lot of thought before I tried to cross him.
Yeah, well, me too. I did think about it once, that night he shot my partner Curly Boyd whilst we was planning this job. Curly and me went back a few years. There wasn't no call to gun Curly down when all he done was ask a question.
We've both been with Bill a long time, Shorty, and we know how crazy mean he can get at times. After we get our shares of the money, maybe you and me ought to light out of here. Head for Arizona or some other place. After pulling a job big as this, the law dogs and the cavalry are gonna be turning over every rock looking for us. There'll be plenty of them out to hang us, for sure.
Yeah, I ain't looking to stretch no rope. It's a good idea, Joe, to head west when we collect our money.
I've sure been thinking on it a plenty.
Lucas jerked his horse to a halt in a clump of sagebrush and broom weed. He pointed to something with the barrel of his rifle.
Yonder he is, Shorty.
I'll be damned. The fool's just sitting out yonder on his horse, leading a spare. One of them spotted Palouse Indian ponies from up in Idaho country. The dumb son bitch ain't even trying to run for it now that he sees us. He's just sitting there like he was froze or something.
It don't seem quite right. Spread out and we'll rush him. Shoot both them horses if we can so he'll be afoot. Let's ride! Hiya!